Hey, I'm Robert Vinlow, and I'm from New York Times Games, and I'm here talking to people about Wordle and the Wordle Archive. Do you all play Wordle?
Yeah.
I have something exciting to show you.
Oh, okay.
It's the Wordle Archive.
Oh!
Oh,
and so you if keep I miss your... it, I can like go back.
100%.
Oh, that's sick.
So now you can play every Wordle that has ever existed. There's like 1,000 puzzles.
Oh my god, I love it.
Amazing. New York Times Games subscribers can now access the entire Wordle Archive. Find out more at nytimes.com/games.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your I Took a Second and Said Me Too of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
I'm Addison Ray at the New York Times.
Addison Ray's at the New York Times. Big day at the New York
Times.
We've
been waiting for this a long time.
Can we say long-awaited day?
Really?
Absolutely. We're very excited that you're here. Addison, the album, is coming.
Yeah. June 6th.
Yes, June 6th. Addison, the album is coming. You just played it for us. We're going to talk in some detail about what we heard.
Okay.
But also, I feel like there's a lot of backstory. There's a lot of big picture stuff. There's stuff that's embedded in the music. And then there's stuff that almost predates the music that sets the table for it. And I think we're going to get into all of it today.
Amazing.
Can I start with like a very niche, hyper-local question?
Yeah.
Okay. So every time that I've seen you on Instagram in the last, let's say, 5 days, outside of like the Met Gala after party, you're at an incredibly specific downtown, like, cool spot. Who showed you that in New York? Like, what is your map and how did you acquire it?
Okay. My friend Tyrell, he's a photographer.
Sure.
He's like one of my best friends. He showed me High Valley.
Yep.
I stumbled across Left Bank just by walking with my friend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to act like Cafe Forgot is like unknown because people definitely know Cafe Forgot now. But I feel like for the most part, like my friends and peers, like I have my version of New York, but it's pretty like basic until I burn something to the ground. Like I like to really like go somewhere until I hate it or like eat something till I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, the classics like Bar Pity.
Yeah,
love a Bar Pity.
Of course.
I love Four Charles.
Mm-hmm.
Or have you guys been?
I have not.
Oh,
not
my
yet.
God.
Not yet.
Good luck getting in.
You beat, us. Yeah, you beat us. You beat us
No,
there.
It's really, wow. It's so good, but it's
just
actually really hard.
Us.
No, it's hard to get in, and this is like a thing, but it's so good. I like to get to know the places that I'm at.
Yeah.
I think that comes from like growing up in Louisiana and then wanting to feel like I'm at home.
Yeah.
In LA, I have like a routine.
Right.
Like I have a ritualistic life.
But take us back to your Louisiana then. So what was your life like growing up? I think for people who don't know you or who know you only through TikTok and you sort of taking off during the pandemic and branching out into makeup and then music and everything
film
else,
and
film,
okay. Yeah, yeah,
he's all that. Like, but before that, what was like the everyday life of Addison Ray?
So I was born and raised in Lafayette, Louisiana. It's kind of like all of my family is around near there, or like Rain is a place that's a really small town in Louisiana. Where my family is from. And I had grown up dancing. So I started dancing when I was like 6 years old. I remember coming across like this sign that said, sign up to dance today. And I must've been like 5 or 6. And I was wearing a Lilo costume, like Lilo and Stitch.
Wow.
And my mom was driving me around and I was like, oh, can we sign up to dance? And she was like, sure. And let's like pull in and see what it is. So we drove up and I like fell in love with it that day.
Were you already like choreographing at home, like putting on shows for your parents?
I was just always dancing.
Like, you were, and what were you dancing to? Like, what are your earliest memories of songs that made you want to move?
I'm in love with the stripper. It's really random. But
You're really dating us and situating us in time.
No, but I remember
for yourself.
I mean, obviously I would listen to also like the Cheetah Girls or like Hannah Montana.
Sure.
But I have a really early memory of me and my mom. It was like whenever my mom, it was just me and my mom living together in this little bitty house. And I remember it was my birthday and we were getting ready to go to this concert. And I'm in Love with the Stripper was on MTV. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, I love this. And like, I love dancing. And it made me feel so weird. And I don't know. I just feel like that's an early memory for me.
So how old were you?
I must have been like 4 or 5. I must have been. Wait, I must have been a little bit older. Maybe 6, 7.
Was it when your mom saw how that made you feel? Like, was she policing it or was she
no,
like leaning into it?
My mom never really was strict about that when I was really little. She was kind of like, let me do my thing. She had really crazy friends, like really wild girlfriends that would just dance to like anything. I mean, a lot of Britney was on the radio at the time. And like Justin Timberlake even was, you know, Cry Me a River. I remember dancing to Cry Me a River a lot.
You were out. You were five, by the way. I'm in love with the stripper. Came.
Okay, you looked it up.
Googled it. Yes. Okay. Five. Google. So that's what I thought. Because that makes sense. Because then around six is when I started dancing. But yeah. So five. I was like trying to age myself up, so my mom didn't seem crazy. So, no, I'm kidding. My mom was the cool mom.
I grew up in a dance studio also because my mother was a dance teacher. And she had a studio in Florida when I was a kid. And like I remember the energy of being in there and the smells and the music. And like when you think back on your earliest times as part of that like coven or whatever it was, like what was the vibe in the dance studio for you when you were a kid?
I mean, everybody was so young and fun. I feel like it was just natural. And it felt like school outside of school in a lot of ways. I made a lot of my closest and best friends through dance. And I don't know. It was just a safe space, I think. I think when I was growing up, you know, my family life was a little bit like up and down. And I think, a little chaotic. And as, you know, most people's is.
Who can relate?
Right. Yeah, everyone.
Yeah.
For the most part. And then I think dance was kind of an escape for me. I remember dancing to Black or White by Michael Jackson, and that was a really fun time for me. I think it was just a channel for me to understand myself better and get to know myself a little bit better, and almost like escapism, which I feel like is kind of how I approach music in a lot of ways too. It's a lot of an escape, which is why there aren't really like ballads, you know, on the album.
Right. It's all pretty upbeat. Some stuff is a little moodier than others, but it's
still kind of, you can dance to it still.
And the energy is like, maintains at a high level.
And that's important to you. Being able to dance to everything.
Yeah. You know, I'm not one to really listen to like really slow, you know, emotional music very much. Cause I feel like I am such an emotional person naturally that like I get there by myself. Unless it's like, you know, Landslide or something. And I then I'll cry about that. Or like Songbird by Fleetwood Mac is a slow song I really love.
Do you remember when you started realizing that people were taken with your dancing? Like, were you like, oh, am I the best one here? Like, were you getting feedback or noticing people's responses that showed you that you could do it in a professional way?
Yeah, I remember when I was first really competing seriously, which I must have been like 10. Yeah, 10 or 11. I was a mini at the time. And at the studio that I was at was in Lafayette. I remember we got colors for dance. Like everyone had a different color in this one routine to my boyfriend's back. And I had hot pink. And that is kind of what I was like, wait, I might be kind of good because I got hot pink. And I remember being in the front of this formation where we did like leg holds. And I was like, I was feeling myself.
Sure.
But I think at that point everyone on the team was really amazing though. I think Miss Jenny, who was the teacher, she really pushed us like as minis, and it was really intense. I remember making myself learn a left split like pretty early and just like feeling like there was this standard to be upheld, but she was also kind of just this teacher that showed you where it could take you, and that's why it kind of was so motivating. It was never like aggressive in me and ever. And it
wasn't
always
like dance mom's
energy. It definitely wasn't that. It wasn't anything that you didn't want to do. It was like ways to make you really know if you want it, you know?
But did it also, I mean, one of the things about certainly the early years of becoming a pop star is people, I think, sometimes think it just happens by magic, but it doesn't happen by magic. It's incredibly hard labor. Do you think that like that era of dance and focus prepped you for whatever this labor is now?
Discipline and routine.
And even stage work. I think at that time when we were competing, I remember actually there was this one time whenever I sprained my wrist because I had finally learned how to do a back handspring. And I did it at school because I was trying to show off. And I was very much like that kid that was like, let's do gymnastics during recess. Like, who are we going to pick up in the air?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, totally. You bet me.
Who are we going to put in the air?
Right. Who are we going to pick up?
I can do it.
I know. I'm like, I'll do it. Or like, no, come on. You can get picked up. I can pick you up. Also, I'm the kind of person that like, I would pick both of you up right now. Like, I can. And I know I can. Like,
we're not going to do that on camera.
5 million views.
Me picking you up. No, but I'm so that type of person to like want to be daredevilish, and I've always been that way. And so when I learned how to do a back handspring, the first time I was like, oh, I have to go and show my friends at school so like they can feel like I can spot them and we can all do back handsprings, because we would make routines at recess. And then I remember I did one and it was kind of bad. And I was like, wait, guys, like I promise I can do better than this. And then I did another one and I sprained my wrist, but I have a really high pain tolerance. And also I'm like super, like I'm not going to show pain. Like, I don't know. I'm really weird about it.
That's actually a very slept on
trait.
Trait for, I think, successful people, certainly in the entertainment space.
Feeling no pain.
Feeling no pain or not acknowledging pain.
Yeah, being able to push through.
But, yeah, so I remember spraining my wrist and then I kind of, you know, I was like, all right, I gotta pretend like that didn't happen. So I remember sitting alone at a picnic table, like, how am I gonna tell my mom? How am I gonna tell my dance teacher? Like, what am I gonna do? Miss Jenny's gonna be pissed. And I remember I came to rehearsals and I had a wrap on my wrist and it's like an ace bandage. So I was kind of feeling cool, you know, I was like, yeah, I did something that was like worth getting hurt for. And then we had a competition that weekend and I still had my wrist, it was like very much sprained. Like, it wasn't broken, but it was pretty intense. And I remember performing and having to practice with one arm and like one hand holding my, I'm like, should I just show you? I was like this, but I was supposed to be like this and I had to be like this. And I remember at that time thinking, oh, like I definitely could figure it out if this happens to me anytime, you know?
You can play through it. You're on your black swan shit.
Totally, totally. I was like, beauty is pain. No, but that is so real, you know? But it's so real. And I think there's so many painful moments just that come with, I shot a music video the other day. Like, we were doing this routine and I have really crazy blisters on my feet right now, which you can't see, but it's my fault because I walked like a mile in Louboutins and that was just a mistake.
Walk a mile in these Louboutins.
You were living that Iggy Azalea life.
Right, totally. I know. I was like, I want to see if that can be done. And I'll tell you, it can be done. But
the blisters hurt.
The blisters hurt. And then I had the music video, so we had to wear... We didn't have to. We wanted to wear Louboutins for the for the dance sequence that we did. And I remember in that moment, I was kind of like, oh, this is what it takes, you know?
Were dance competitions you traveled?
Yeah.
And was that sort of your first sense of like, the world is bigger than my hometown?
Yeah, actually. I remember I lived in Houston for a little bit. And but I remember traveling to Houston for dance competitions and like Alabama and even Florida. I'm pretty sure we went to Florida.
I bet you did.
I think we went to Disney.
Plenty of dance competitions.
For like UDA maybe when I was younger. And I remember just like, yeah, the world felt much bigger than it did at home. But I always felt that way because I was kind of one of those kids that was on social media way too young.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah, like I was on Twitter and like had fan pages for like One Direction and stuff. And
that
like,
was your earliest social media was as
I had a Facebook fan page. I've actually told, I'm friends with Maddie Ziegler who was on Dance Moms. And I told her like, I was like, I'm going to expose myself right now. I had a fan page for not you, but Brooke. Which we always crack up about
Maddie.
It. No, but I loved Maddie. And Maddie was obviously always incredible and still is just one of the best dancers ever. But
you were Team Brooke.
But I was Team Brooke because I loved acro. I was really into like Cirque du Soleil and like contortion. I remember the first time I saw the Dance Moms trailer. I think Paige is doing a chin stand in it with her feet by her face and like over her. And I was like, I have to learn how to do that. And I remember sitting on my couch. Well, I was like essentially falling off my couch trying to like go down the top of it. Essentially, if I was like standing right here and I put my chest right here and let my legs kick over, I was like doing
that right at that age.
No, I'm like, I would show, I would do it. No, I don't need it. And plus, you wouldn't know if I got hurt anyways.
That's true.
But yeah, I remember doing that. I remember also around that time, this is so random and I'm all over the place, but I remember also watching This Is It around that time that Dance Moms came out. My mom made me watch it. And I remember just seeing
That's the Michael Jackson special.
And I was so fascinated by just the stage, I guess, presence of it all. And I was just so interested and intrigued. And I don't know, I always was really deep into music because of dance.
Yeah.
You know, and there was like kind of this through line with dance and music that kind of just always pulled me in. Like my mom didn't really like force any of it upon me. It was kind of just all really natural. And I think I just absorbed a lot of my mom's tastes and my dad's tastes in music and my grandparents.
I've heard you talk about your first trip to LA with your mom and sort of like seeing what was out there, like, you know, Southeast is one thing, but like going to California, like LA, were you immediately like, this is where I belong? Like, talk to me about that trip.
Yeah, I think you kind of always know when you want to get out of where you're at. And I think Actually, Jenny, she had a sister named Caroline, and she moved to LA to dance. And I remember thinking that at the first time that I even heard about that or knew that was a possibility, I was like, oh, great. Well, it's obviously a thing.
It's a thing. That's what you do if you're a dancer.
If you're a dancer and you want to make it or you want to figure it out, you got to like go out there and do it. And so I was always just really intrigued by that initially. And then when I first went, I was 16. I went with my best friend, Gussie, who I'm still friends with to this day. She's one of my like closest and longest friends. Mm-hmm. We went for my 16th birthday and I brought my cousin as well, Kristen. And we both were like, all right, we got to go to LA. We have to just experience it. We have to like see famous people or something. Like we have to
what
see
did you
some.
Do?
Yeah, what was like, on the itinerary? Yeah,
like, you know, it's so funny because I actually remember me and Gussie planning this trip out before we were old enough. Mm-hmm. 16, it's not even really old enough, but like old enough to even think that was a possibility to do. And we were like, you know, when we graduate high school, we're going to get a Prius and we're just going to drive to LA. Like we were really in on like the gas mileage of it all. We were like, oh, it's going to be cheaper and like we're going to be able to
make
it. It
was your crossroads moment.
Yeah, exactly. It really was my crossroads moment.
Crossroads.
And yeah, I remember we were like writing it down on this piece of paper on how we would get there and where we'd stop on the way and what that would look like and where would we live in order to make this happen. But yeah, when I was 16, we came out here. We stayed in Tehachapi. Does anybody ring a bell? I think that's how you say it, but it's this place. I mean, it's hours outside of LA.
It's like
not by Hollywood. Right. Yeah, like not Hollywood.
It was where you could afford.
Like, right. I was like, okay. So my mom got us an Airbnb out there, and I remember just being like, yeah, I mean, we're here, and like this is better than anything I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. And I actually very vividly remember listening to The Morning by The Weeknd while we were driving through these like canyons and valleys. I mean, it must have been like 5 a.m. We'd get up and drive 2 hours into the city so we'd have a full day.
Wow.
And my mom would drive us. It was really sweet. But my mom, she was just down for us to kind of do anything. Yeah. She was like, whatever you want to see or do, we should just try. And I actually remember seeing a few like famous people that I was like, what?
Name them,
like,
name them. Let's
like
go.
I saw like Justin Bieber.
On your first trip to LA?
Yes, it was really crazy. He was on Melrose Place. We went to Melrose Place.
Just hanging out.
He was like going in and out of a store. And I remember seeing paparazzi and just being like, whoa, like this is just like at an arm's length. And it's so close, but obviously felt so far. And then I danced when I came. I actually went to the Dance Moms dance studio because I was just like, I need to see that and
to like take a
that.
Class and
I took some classes and I did like lessons and stuff because I was just like, I really need to get the most out of this. What else did we do? I mean, we went to like Nasty Gal was a store on Melrose at the time, which I was
that was an era
time
right
capsule.
And I was really into that show that came out of Nasty Gal.
Yep. And so then did you spend the rest of your teenage years basically being like, how can I get back here? Because then you have this, so you have this little detour where you go to college, you pursue being a sportscaster. Where did that come from?
All right. So like, this is where it gets a little bit more like life happens and then you follow those things. Mm-hmm. Because I think growing up, I loved the Tiger Girls. And a lot of Tiger Girls that were on teams in the past went to the same dance studio I did in Lafayette.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was kind of a thing, you know, you
like
dance
a feeder
competitively.
Program almost.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, I'm going to be a Tiger Girl because I don't know really what else to do with dance. And I think it becomes a struggle once you graduate high school to do anything with dance unless you move to New York or move to LA or, you know, go to school and go to college or dance there.
Train
and so
for,
I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to try out. My parents were both like, you know, I don't know, LSU is really expensive and it's a big school. Like, maybe you do, you know, a more local college, which is like UL, which is in Lafayette.
Yeah.
And so I was like, but I really want to be a Tiger Girl.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Please let me just audition. And the thing was, to audition, you had to enroll. And so.
So you were there with a purpose.
Yes.
And it was not
so I was
necessarily
like,
education.
Yes. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to make it. Like, that was my goal. I was like, I'm going to make the Tiger Girls team. Then I'm going to get a stipend, and then it's going to make sense that I'm going here, you know?
Oh, that's a paid opportunity.
Yeah, well, you get a stipend when you make the team. And so that was kind of like my thing with my parents. Was like, you know, if I go, I
that
get
the
stipend,
deal.
And that's how we'll be able to make this work.
Yeah.
And then we ended up actually moving our house. Like, we moved houses. My whole family moved to Baton Rouge.
To give you that chance.
Yeah, because we also the room and board thing was really expensive. And we were kind of like, we need to just make adjustments here if we want to make this work. But obviously I was like, I'm going to make the team.
Yeah.
And it was a 2-day audition. And I remember, I think it started around 80 something girls. I might be wrong, but 80 something girls. And then the next day cut down to like 30s, in the 30s. And I made that first cut and I was really confident. I was like, oh, I'm going to make it. No worries. And then I didn't make it. And I remember being like, oh.
How
like,
long did it take you to get over guilty. That?
Well, I think I got over it as far as, you know, it's okay. It's not meant to be. It's mm-hmm. fine. But I felt a lot of guilt because I was like, I told my parents.
Because you sort of took everyone with you.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, this is kind of the only way this was going to be possible as if I was on the team, really. And so I was kind of panicking. Like, you know, I just wanted to get out of where I was from. Or, yeah. And Baton Rouge was just kind of like a step towards, you know, getting out of that. And then, yeah, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to study journalism because, like, how can
here you
I?
Are.
Do you want to trade, like, okay, trade chairs and sort of, like, get in the
no,
zone?
I
you
don't. Do some I really work? Don't. Okay. No, and I realized right. really quickly, like, damn, I don't want to be writing papers about things I don't care about. And I think that was hard for me.
We've
initially,
all been there.
You know?
Yeah. It's our job to write papers about like, things we don't care about.
Totally. Which is, like, props to y'all for, like, getting through that. But then I was like, well, you know, maybe – because I always loved, like – entertainment. That was just kind yeah. of the thing. It was like performance, entertainment. You know, I wanted to act. I wanted to sing. I wanted to dance. Mm-hmm. But it was like, well, where does that even come from?
Well, yeah. And where – and you have to act to something.
Totally.
You have to look at a
right.
camera.
And so I'm like,
dance
let's
for
go.
An audience.
Sports like, broadcasting. Like, let yep. me just get in front of it. Let me be
better
like –
better than newspapers.
I was almost like – I think around that time especially because I was looking at like Erin Andrews and like yep. Kelsey Wingert. And I remember just being like, oh, you know – these girls are cute and look like they have fun and they're in front of a camera. So like that feels like it could be fulfilling for me and mm-hmm. give me something that I was looking for. And that wasn't like dance or acting or singing, but maybe that's some type of path into that. You know, it gets me in front of the camera. It gets me experienced in that. But then I was still doing TikTok around this time.
Right. So was it bubbling up
yeah.
in the background?
Like yes. I downloaded TikTok like my senior year.
Of high school.
But it was just because everyone else had it. And I was kind of like, right. oh.
You didn't think of it as a serious.
No, it was just right. like a new app. You know, it's like when Instagram mm-hmm. started. It was kind of right. just like, oh, everybody's
what
on this.
What was your
this.
First
it's
TikTok? Just, do you remember? I bet you remember.
I mean that I made it like yeah. on someone else's account. It was just like a random dance. I was on my friends' accounts before I had my own.
I see.
You know, but you always like, thought yeah. of it as a place for dance.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of associated with that at the time sure. a lot. And then I was, you know, lip singing and stuff.
When did it start to hit, like, even in a small way?
It really started to hit, actually, when I still lived in Shreveport and mm-hmm. had just graduated high school. Mm-hmm. So when I was in that summer transition into college, mm-hmm. I was just going hard. Like, I was like, something's here and I don't mm-hmm. know what it is, but I need to show up for
sure.
this, you know? And I was, like, not really, like, sure where it would go or take me, but I was definitely recognizing something that was pulling me to it that was like, okay, I'm starting to feel some type of shift in like the way that I'm even presenting or showing or
you felt posting. Yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just felt something that felt good. And I kept doing that. And then when football season started at LSU, mm-hmm. I randomly was getting noticed at games, which was weird. And like mm-hmm. by like younger kids, they were like, yeah. hey, we saw you on our TikTok. And I was like, oh,
okay.
This is weird. Like I'd never been noticed by people outside of, you know, like
your
comments
main,
or like,
circle.
Or my circle. But mm-hmm. online, it was like, oh, a comment from a stranger was mm-hmm. more like, you could see how that could be not real
yeah.
or, you know, or feel mm-hmm. like it's not real.
Yeah.
And then you see it in real life and you're like, whoa. So I saw that and I was kind of like, oh, I got
to
keep
I'm
going
I'm onto
with
something.
This. Yeah.
When you start to see the real world wins from TikTok at the games or around campus, whatever it is, like, how did that then turn into what you were doing on the app? Were you like, okay, three times a day? Like, what? Like, how much did you sort of lean into that to standardize
right.
your practice on TikTok? Like, were you interested in optimizing it in every
I
way
mean,
you
yeah,
could?
Of course. Like, I think I was posting like ridiculous amounts of videos a day.
Now from the top, make it drop.
She talk too much, but I still hit.
Bitch, I got you, man.
You, my hair grew back. I look like a flute.
And I,
ooh. Like how many?
Must have been like sometimes like 7 to 8 videos, which were like me really trying and like making sure they felt good, you
yeah.
know? But yeah, I mean, I think even some days I'm sure like 12 videos. Like, I don't know. I just was really going in.
So you're spending hours a day dancing and recording. Mm-hmm. And how are you choosing the music that you wanted to be moving to?
I mean,
in
I was
those
definitely
early...
strategic with it, you mm-hmm. know? I don't know. You know, when I reflect back on that time, all this time that has passed, I've recognized how much choice and taste is kind of a luxury in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Because back then when I was starting this and I was on TikTok and I was posting these things, and it was a lot about like, you know, how am I just going to get out of here? Like, yeah. It wasn't even about like, all right, let me show the intricacies of myself right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't mm-hmm. need to, I didn't feel like I needed to do that yet, which is why, and I think it comes up now of people feeling like, oh, this is inauthentic. Or did you ever even like to make music, or did mm-hmm. you ever sing, or were you ever anything more than just a TikTok dancer?
Right.
Was because I was just like, I'm going to make it out of here first.
So you were following the winds.
Whatever was trending.
Instead of following your own.
Yeah, which was kind of like
heart.
A sacrifice that had to be made.
But
know?
I also wonder, it's also an education, because one of the things that I've actually been really curious about is, look, when TikTok emerged and became a force, one of the things that we had to do was reckon with what was its impact on the music industry, and also how was it changing what kinds of songs were getting made, right?
Right.
I wonder how that looked from your perspective. What did you learn about popular music through the lens of, I want to make videos dancing? Like, what did that teach you about songs and song structure and all that?
Oh, I think in the beginning, I actually remember getting little brand deals from like labels mm-hmm. paying me to like post to the
promote
songs,
their songs
when I was in college.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, I mean, they jumped on that really fast, you know? Like, I remember even big songs that I loved. Actually, really funny. Sex, Money, Feelings, Die, that song by Leaky Lee. It's mm-hmm. one of my favorite songs of all times. But I remember actually like a label being like, oh, we're, you know, having people post to this song. And it was like right when the app was really starting mm-hmm. to be anything. It still wasn't even that big, because I remember a lot of people that I was in school with weren't on it yet. Mm-hmm. Even like the college, you mm-hmm. know, peers, they weren't really on it yet. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of still new. But I remember like that I was like, oh, this is like really interesting that there's the music industry is actually
and
really
they were
leaning
paying
on
people
this.
To post. They were yeah, saying, they were make like a video, leaning. Here's a few $100,
right.
whatever it is.
Yeah. $100, I wish. Okay. It was probably like $20.
$20
like
bucks a video
yeah,
at that time?
I actually remember like being like, holy shit, $20.
And were they like PayPaling you, or were you?
Yeah, they were PayPaling.
Like, no,
it was actually really
no invoice.
Sketchy.
I was going to say, all our friends in the music business.
Like, yeah. How dare you?
PayPaling Addison Rae $20 in 2019? Are you?
Oh my God. Like, I bet I know somebody that really actually remembers doing that with me.
Oh,
it's
they're
like
they email
won't
us
say
at
it.
NYTimes.com.
They will watch the show. Like, we're going to hear
funny.
About it. If
that's
you're the
funny.
Person who PayPaled Addison Rae $20 to dance to a Leaky Lee song, you know where to find
so
us.
So you didn't have a team at this point. You didn't know how to negotiate.
No,
you weren't,
no,
you weren't
like
my rate is 10X. Yeah.
No, but I also didn't have a rate because I was just like, whoa. I'm getting paid $20. Like, I didn't ever have a job growing up, which I'm really fortunate.
You were dancing your ass off.
Well, I was. And I think, you know, I'm really, really lucky and blessed that my parents were like, we're actually just going to invest in these extracurricular activities for you to feel like you're getting somewhere or doing something. Or my parents were always really supportive of mm-hmm. this dream and like very okay with and understanding of like the sacrifices. And,
sure.
and I'm really lucky that they were that way. But yeah, I mean, I was dancing every single day.
So that was like the first money you ever made
yeah,
off your dancing.
Actually, yeah. And I was like, whoa, this is a lot of money.
And you were learning about the business. You mm-hmm. understood. Did that like make you cynical in any way and be like, damn, is what's popular actually popular? Or is it just all these kind of like hidden hands behind the scenes being like, dance to these songs?
I actually don't even think I was thinking about it at the time.
You're just cashing the check.
Yeah, I was just like, give me my 20. I was like, did the 20 hit the PayPal yet? Did you guys send over the 20? Yeah,
were you doing that a lot? Like,
yeah,
like it was kind dozens of times. Like, what percentage of the songs you were dancing to in
that
pre-pandemic era were paid for?
I mean, I was lucky to get like,
okay,
you know, a video or like, you know, teeth whitening strips or something random. Like, I don't
was
know.
Was that your first product placement?
I remember it was some sort of like handheld light.
Oh,
teeth
that thing with
yes!
the handle.
Yeah,
the,
definitely
the
didn't work.
Golden era TikTok product.
I mean,
like
I don't know.
the,
it works.
Still,
I'm like, am I still
the check
like,
is still cashing. Yeah, still
I'm like, did that $30 send? No, but yeah, I don't know. I was kind of just doing whatever because I was like, whoa, this is crazy. It was the first amounts of money I was making, so I was like, this is fun.
But then you did move to LA. You did get management. At any point in your mind, where's the Britney of it all hovering over you as another person from that
Louisiana.
Part of the country who then had an incredible, you know,
right.
Is that in your mind? Are you looking at whether it's her specifically or a part of her career or a specific thing she did and said, if she came from here and did that, what was the thing or what were the moments?
I think that was always kind of subconscious of like, if somebody could do it and make it big and make it out, then it's obviously a thing that I could do too.
Yeah.
And you know, with Britney, she grew up a few hours away from where I grew up. And so I think that always was something that was felt like, okay, well, somebody did it and somebody completely made it out. But even her story was a little bit different. You know, she was younger and, and going to New York.
She had already been discovered.
She had already been discovered when she was little and on camera and kind of was starting those things a little bit younger. So I think, you know, it gave me a sense of this like looming inspiration of like, okay, she completely transformed her life and she's from this small town. But it still did feel a little distant because I was like, well, maybe I'm too old, honestly. Like, maybe I'm like, not experienced
enough. Like, basically, because she started at, like, 11 or something. So you're like, oh, did I miss my window in a weird way?
Even younger, I think she started. But yeah, I was kind of like, did I miss that, like, prime window for, like, formative years and shape, which you need, you know?
Yeah, washed up at 12.
Like, just forget it. You forget your dreams. If you didn't accomplish them by 12, forget it.
It's quiet.
You missed it, yeah. No, but it definitely was a little bit... yeah, inspiring for me to see that and to see her.
When the pandemic hit, is like what changed for you?
So I moved to LA. So I dropped out of LSU about 2 months into it. Mm-hmm. So I went to my counselor and I was like, it's really hard. I don't like writing papers about things I don't like. Should I be a dentist? Like, I don't know. That was the thing that I was questioning. I was like, should I maybe just do like dental hygienist? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, maybe that's my thing that I need to
real
just settle.
Sliding doors moment.
Yeah, I was like, should I just settle on that? And like, no, I was hearing people in my life that were pretty important to me at the time saying, like, you know, let's be realistic here. Like, you're not going to just move to LA and dance or act or sing. Like, that's
and
not going to happen.
And be on the New York Times podcast in 2025.
And be here on the podcast.
That doesn't just happen.
It doesn't just happen. It really doesn't. But it really doesn't just happen. You know, you
big
have
facts.
To really make a decision. And I think at that time I was like, I was getting, you know, I was on TikTok. I was having... you know, a decent amount of followers.
Millions at that point.
I think maybe a million. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just hit a million. Maybe not even. I might have only had like 350,000.
When you dropped out.
When I dropped out. And I was kind of like.
When is that timing-wise?
This must have been, I mean, I dropped out Thanksgiving weekend.
Of 2019.
Of 2019.
Like before the pandemic. COVID. Yeah.
Dropped out, moved in with a girl that I met on TikTok and her family.
Really?
Yeah.
And also from Louisiana?
No.
Oh.
That lived in Temecula.
And you were just crashing with a girl you met on TikTok.
Yeah, and she was a great friend to me and so kind, obviously, for letting me do that and stay there.
What did her parents think?
I mean, they were like, yeah, cool, whatever. Right? I mean, we're both young. We were both like young girls and it was like,
okay. Was she trying to make it also?
Yeah, and we were both really just grinding, posting a lot of videos. And I remember just being eventually like, okay.
So you had your own content house.
I mean, not really.
In Temecula.
Not really, but kind of. It was like
pre-hype.
And I was like, wait, I need to move closer to the city because I wanted to really start auditioning, actually. That was like something that happened really fast for me was once I moved there, I was like, oh, we got to hit the ground running. Yep. You know, like if anything, and I was already feeling like, well, I'm 19. I've already missed my window of like really getting to know myself younger and getting there. And so I was like, we have to go and get started. And so I was like, I need to go to auditions. I need to go. I don't know. I need to get in the room with songwriters. I don't know. I need to do something that wasn't just doing TikToks. I knew that really quick.
Do you needed to diversify?
Yeah. That I needed to figure it out fast because I was really already feeling like trapped in a way of like, okay, well, am I just posting on TikTok?
Yeah.
Like, is this? And I think I knew subconsciously and consciously that, you know, people are getting introduced to me like this. Mm-hmm. And this means that it's shaping the way that people will allow me to exist in other spaces. I definitely knew that really early on. But there was
no template at that point post TikTok template. I mean, whether it's you, whether it's Charlie, like any of the other folks. I remember, I think I wrote something in like 2020 or 2021 where it was like the first wave, maybe when He's All That came out and there was like Charlie's reality show. And it was like the first step. Of like,
off
what
platform.
So you say, how do you shape yourself
if people have only
known you in this box?
Right.
And you saw like, you know, Noah Beck trying one thing and you trying another thing. And I just remember being struck at like some people just couldn't figure it out. But then I saw He's All That, and I was like, nah, she's gonna be fine.
And even before music, you were doing acting, and makeup was sort of your first foray, sort of like.
Well, you know, I was already making music at that time. When I filmed He's All That, I was doing sessions.
Yep.
When I say I hit the ground running, I really did. I met my managers, who are still my managers to this day, mm-hmm. within the first 2 months of me moving to LA, mm-hmm. 3 months maybe.
And when you guys put together whatever it was, the 5-year plan, was it dance videos into movies, makeup, music? Who was pushing what? Like, where did you see your actual path? Like,
well, when I met them, I was like, you know, hey, this is what I want to do with my career. I want to be an actor, and I want to be a mm-hmm. dancer, and I want to be a singer, and I want to, you know, I want to be a star. And they were like, okay, we were walking into this thinking you just wanted to make online. Like, that was kind of the brand deals. Agencies were signing.
Of course.
Social media stars. A lot of the time. And now it's totally plausible career paths. And so at the time, I think they were just like, you know, oh, wow, we didn't know that you wanted this stuff. And I was like, yeah, I do. So I need to start working on it now. So what can I do? I started doing meetings ASAP. Mm-hmm. I mean, they put me in a lot of rooms that I was really lucky to be in at that time. Mm-hmm. And luckily, people were willing to take me in. I think that was what was so nice about being in the first wave of this all, is that people were really interested through all, you know, elements of entertainment and down to do a meeting.
Because they're as curious about you as you are about them. Because I imagine a lot of executives at that time maybe had never met a person who was genuinely famous in that space.
Yeah, you were an exotic zoo animal.
Okay, let's go. I'll meet all these people and give them my spill and whatever. And so when I told them that, they were like, great, let's get to meetings. And then I ended up getting He's All That mm-hmm. pretty soon after that. And we filmed that in 2020.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it happened really fast.
And you were making music, as you say.
I was making music. I was in sessions. I was writing.
I hope you'll forgive me, but I have 2 albums worth of leaks of your old stuff.
Look, it's our job to have the leaks.
What I do. If you're the person who works in the New York Times, who gave me the leaks, you know who you are.
What's your favorite leak?
I'm so glad that you asked me that.
Oh my gosh.
Because I have them pull off. I was listening earlier today to Never Want to See You Again.
Oh my God. That is funny to me.
Yeah, see, we have all the 2 albums worth.
Oh my God, I want to delete some of these for you.
No.
Which ones would you delete?
Yeah,
and which ones would you...
Like, really a lot of them. And that was really devastating when that happened to me.
I'm sure it was. We don't mean to minimize the devastation, but the archivist in me feels like it's important to preserve these.
Leaks are important.
They're important. They're historical.
I've actually seen, like, people make CDs. Physical.
We're going to Vinyl Me Please the Addison Leaks.
That's what I'm saying. 20 years from now, imagine the kind of secret re-release box set of all this stuff. Just think about it.
That'll never happen.
What were those early sessions like for you when you were trying to find your sound and your comfort in front of a microphone? Like, mm-hmm. were they punishing? Was it frustrating? Or
no.
were you loved it off the jump?
I loved it. And I also was just down to learn. And I think a lot of those rooms that I was in initially, I pretty much from the jump, I was like, I don't want to cut demos. I want to write. So mm-hmm. I at least know what I'm doing, you know, mm-hmm, or can connect with the things that I'm singing, especially because I was so new to it. I was like, all right, how do I put myself into this in the best way? And, you know, I was in the room with a lot of really amazing songwriters that are very successful and took a chance on being with me. I worked with Charlie on those early days.
Yeah,
Charlie XCX very early on.
Very early on. I actually don't know if the song that we made leaked.
There may be other leaks, but this is...
That's it. Okay, wait.
These are the zip files.
Here, so there are some songs that you guys... Oh, wait, actually, it might
Which one?
Be... No, it's not that. It's not that. Don't press play. Please, please God, don't press play.
Come see me.
I cannot hear that.
If you want to hear it, come see me. Hey, it's John. Quick detour here for Song of the Week. We're going to talk about Oil Money, which is a newish country rap song by Graham Barham, and a little bit about the last few months in country rap fusion.
Heard that new Graham Barham song? Get in. Let's talk about it. She got a body like old money. Graham Barham is an up-and-coming country singer from Louisiana who has some interesting ideas about what country should be. Should it be mixed with comedy? Probably. Should it be mixed with hip-hop? Definitely. She don't need the drip or the whip or the Louboutin. She could look bougie with a bottomland hoodie on. Last year in pop music was the year of Shaboozy, a bar song, Tipsy. Everybody at the bar getting tipsy. ended up tying the all-time record for most weeks at the top of the Billboard Hot 100. And you may have thought a country rap fusion that seems so novel, but of course he wasn't the first person to get to that party. A few years prior, Lil Nas X did with Old Town Road. You could also look at an artist like Morgan Wallen, who uses 808s and hi-hats in his production. When you're facing what he's drinking, are you thinking about me? Graham Barm's Oil Money feels incredibly indebted to the work that Morgan Wallen was doing 3 or 4 years ago. Here's a song that's sassy, that's salacious. You're hearing 808s, you're hearing hi-hats, and Barham singing it partially in true country singing and partially in a little bit of a rapped cadence. She a little stagecoach, little Coachella, little bit Kylie, little bit Bella. People have been blending country with rap for years in all kinds of ways, whether that's Jason Aldean, Blake Shelton. Sam Hunt has also been someone who connects contemporary country music into a longer lineage of what I would describe as talking country. And I'm sure one of your friends is about to come over here because she's supposed to save you from random guys that talk too much. Sam Hunt really helped to set the template for singers who wanted to connect their country heritage to the way that rappers deliver their rhyme. First time I seen her walk by, and I about fell up on my chair. In the wake of Shaboozy, a thing that I imagine must have been happening in Nashville was a sense of how do we get country rap, but with country leading the way. You see different approaches to the style happening everywhere. You have Bailey Zimmerman, who's an incredibly talented young singer, collaborating with Big X the Plug, the Texas rapper, on a song called All the Way, which is this kind of morbid breakup anthem. Leave me all the way. If you say that you're done, no take back. Said you fell out of love and I hate that. You've got Ernest, who's a songwriter for Morgan Wallen, who has this kind of rolling old style country song called Getting Gone, and he got Snoop Dogg on that record. Tell him Snoop, play full of chicken, mama's in the kitchen. There's also 803 Fresh, who has a song called Boots on the Ground, which is kind of like a instructional dance type record, but that somehow made its way all the way to Beyonce, who's been referencing it on her Cowboy Carter tour. Boots on the ground, kicking up some dust. Look, it's 2025. Every singer, every songwriter, every producer in country music almost certainly grew up with hip hop as well. And what you're hearing right now in all of the songs that we just talked about is that people are trying to find a way to make those influences work for them.
Hi, this is Lori Leibovich, editor of Well at the New York Times. There's a lot of misinformation in the health and wellness space. But at the New York Times, no matter what the topic, we apply the same journalistic standards to everything we write about, whether it's the gut microbiome or how to get a good night's sleep. Even if we're talking about something like, is it bad for me to drink coffee on an empty stomach? Everything that our readers get when they dig into a Well article has been vetted. Our reporters are consulting experts, calling dozens of people, doing the research. It can go on for months so that you can make great decisions about your physical health and your mental health. We take our reporting extra seriously because we know New York Times subscribers are counting on us. If you already subscribe, thank you. If you'd like to subscribe, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
That was our song of the week and some other stuff. For full video on Song of the Week of me in the car driving around talking about this, we are on TikTok, we are on Instagram, we're on YouTube at Popcast. And of course, subscribe to Popcast for the full episodes, nytimes.com/Popcast. Like Addison, Joe and I are very picky about our music. So let's get back to talking about that with her right now.
From the jump, I was like, I need to be more involved. Mm-hmm. I don't want to. I also am really picky when it comes to music. I have a really strong taste. I'm such an intentional listener when it comes to music. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like just hearing random stuff.
Yeah.
Even like when we're waiting for things or in the car or driving, I'm like, turn off the radio if I'm not like actively choosing what I'm listening to.
Right, because you're too young for passive listening. You're like, right. I grew up in a generation where I could choose basically everything I wanted to hear.
Right. Well, now it's like, you know, these things subconsciously attach themselves to you. So like, I don't want to hear stuff I don't like. It's like, that's going to be in the back 100%. Of my mind when I'm making stuff I want to like, you know, or that feels like it should be what I like.
And so, also if you're musically inclined, like you're all, like, even if it's in the background,
it's bothersome. You're engaged.
It's like you feel it like sort of back here.
Yes.
And you're just like, no.
I'm like, turn that off.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm the same way.
So what is your relationship to, so your first official single was Obsessed. You say you're obsessed with me, so I don't.
took a second and I said, me too. I'm obsessed with me as much as you. Mm-hmm.
That's 2021, right?
Yeah.
And then when you look back on that moment, are you like, this is all wrong, or do you have a fondness for it?
No, I love Obsessed.
Okay, yeah. We do too.
I actually think like one day Obsessed will get its like Stars Are Blind moment, you know, and people will be like, oh, we actually love it.
It's crazy because I just was reading some old coverage of Obsessed, and I thought it was more positively embraced when it came out, and I was sort of surprised that it was not as positive. Because when you say Stars Are Blind, you're talking about a song that was like reviled.
People which is like, crazy because it's actually an amazing
this
song.
This is what I'm saying. And then people were like, actually, that's genius. Mm-hmm. That wasn't my experience of Obsessed when it came out, but that was your experience.
And did you have a hard time with that initial reaction?
Yeah.
Because the music sort of took a backseat then for a little while.
It did. Yeah, well, I kept writing.
Sure, but in the public presentation
of you. Yeah, I did. I felt definitely a little
you were wounded.
Beaten down. Yeah, I was like, oh, wait, I can't just like have fun and explore. Like people are not going to allow that, right. Really.
You have too many followers for
right.
That.
Right, like I have too many people actually giving an opinion on this for it to be as free as I want it to be. So, yeah, it definitely hurt. And I kept writing, though. I didn't let that stop me from writing.
Yeah, were you like, okay, I've been through this. I'm back in the gym. Like, I'm hitting the back handspring over and over again until I can do it
right. Time to diet and work out again. Yeah, like before I go on the beach, you know? And so.
But did you feel like you were being punished? Like, in a sense, like, who is this TikTok star? Think she can put out a pop dance, you know, like
I mean, even like post Cardi B, like people were still had that snobbishness of like, you know, we've been through so many rounds now of different kinds of viral
social media personalities.
Yeah, and there's like, you know, Troy Sivan
turning into right, and yeah, like did you think like John was saying that they had to put you back in your place because like you were just the girl from the cute dances on TikTok?
Yeah, I did feel that, but I didn't let it get to me that much. I think me not stopping writing was kind of me being like, okay, well, I'll show you
that
I
can
actually get there.
And then
there.
Somewhere in between then, I've personally felt the tide start to shift, and in part around the leak of these demos.
Yeah, that is when it
then
really
you
changed.
Become a little bit of a cult favorite.
This
like, did
saying.
You notice that
this
as it
saying.
Was happening? You're like, oh, like the tone of the conversation around my music, especially my unreleased music, now all of a sudden it's hip to like Addison Rae. Like, when did you clock that?
I think To Die For.
Uh-huh.
Whenever that leaked, I remember seeing it on TikTok a lot. And people were like, wait, why do I kind of like this new Addison Rae? And
without
I was like,
Charlie, before Charlie
before
was
Charlie,
on the song.
Before Charlie was on the song. I actually still love the second verse of that song. I haven't heard that in so long, but
we have it right here if you want to listen to it.
Cue it up any moment.
No, play the Charlie version because that's on streaming. No, but I remember just being like, wait, people are kind of accepting this, which is weird and interesting because a lot of those songs I'm like, I sound terrible and I don't like them myself. Mm-hmm. Like, not all of those songs were songs that I was confident in singing or doing.
You were working through it.
Yeah, I mean,
they
like,
were
I was,
demos.
Those were demos that I was writing.
And they're also at different stages getting, of completion,
totally,
I imagine.
Totally. Yeah. Very. I mean, those are all like day one demos, pretty much.
Really?
I think almost all of them are, except for maybe one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, they still sound pretty good for day one demos. Yeah. But I think Joe's point, like, I feel like in 2022, when I don't know when these specifically leaked, but 2022 into 2023, it almost was like a whisper campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's an interesting thing that had to happen, because rather than you being like, I have 88 million followers on TikTok and you're going to like this song.
Right.
People can kind of be like, oh yeah, we know her. And
totally.
We discovered this on our own.
Yeah, we banged.
It wasn't shoved down our throat. Yeah. Like we came to it ourselves.
Which feels better as
a How did you consumer. Strategize when you realized, oh, now there is a more open-minded audience for me to do my thing?
You know, I remember Charlie, because I played Charlie To Die For when we worked together. Mm-hmm. And she called me after the leak started kind of going off. And mm-hmm. she was just like, hey, I saw the songs got leaked, you know, can I do a second verse on To Die For? Like, cause that's the one I love.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes.
Before you'd even thought like, oh, I should release this properly.
I was not going to release those. I mean,
never.
You know, the EP was just never going to happen.
Right.
And then I was kind of like, wait, why is that kind of amazing? And like, I can't believe Charlie is asking me to be on a song. Like, that's so crazy. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe there should be some little bundle, because I was seeing really nice things being said about some of them. And I was like, maybe I'll just give those to those people that mm-hmm. are wanting that, you know, the finished versions of those songs. And And so it came together really, really fast. But Charlie sent me back her version and I was like, I mean, yeah, you're amazing. So
that was the first domino in mm-hmm. the
into
release of the EP.
Into the EP.
And then was it immediate that there were major labels interested and you were going to make a full album? How did you then come to the team?
Really?
That, the team that you worked on this album
really
with?
Bizarre.
So, yeah, I mean, nobody really cared. And I think I was like, oh, that's fine. I don't really need anybody to care necessarily for me to keep doing this. Mm-hmm. But then I ended up, I knew Ron Perry from Columbia, mm-hmm. kind of just outwardly of working together our music. And I don't even think he really even knew.
Well, Kid Laroi had put out Addison Rae.
And I was friends with Laroi when I first, I mean, I think in like 2020 maybe, mm-hmm. I had met Laroi.
Even before he put that song out. Or
well,
that-
like as a result of him, well, because he put that song on TikTok and it actually had no videos to it when I saw it, or maybe like two or three. But he was kind of like, oh, it's a joke, ha ha ha. And then I made a video with my mom to the song.
Yep.
I need a bad bitch. Addison Rae, shawty the baddest.
And that, like, the song blew up after that, which was really funny and really crazy. But
you'll be taking 10% of that movie.
Right. Like, never got my
20 bucks on PayPal.
I need 20 bucks. PayPal now, Laroi. No, but yeah, I was friends with Laroi since that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some like funny history actually, not with Laroi, but like with the song. Oh my God, I've never said this.
Go
but,
for it.
Let's
go.
But I did like go into the studio and try to record like a verse
like
on
a remix,
that.
Bro.
Yes,
yeah.
Which is so crazy.
So that
thank
exists
God
somewhere.
That didn't ever come out.
Yeah,
like,
leakers,
I,
get on it.
Oh my God, please no. Like if you
was
even care about
fire?
Human life.
Yeah, it didn't. Was it not? It wasn't Smash?
Well, no. It was, well, no.
Why?
Can, because
give
first
us a
of
line.
All, I wasn't comfortable.
Give us a line from it.
Absolutely not. I don't even remember. Actually, I do remember
yes,
it.
You do.
No, but it was just like, not it. Anyways, I remember doing that and then just being like.
And Ron Perry was like, this is not seeing the light.
Yeah, he was like, no, I don't even think he knew about that, honestly. Anyways, it was just a funny little thing and never came out, thank God. But
so you had some relationship
had, like,
with Columbia Records.
Yeah. I mean, no, not because of that.
Okay.
It was more like, it was like outside stuff. I met him and then I knew him even like through Nas. I Little Nas is signed to
yeah,
him.
Sure.
And Rosalia, and those were all like people mm-hmm. that I knew and was friends with. And yeah, it was just kind of a circle thing. It was just like in the family and people knew. And I ended up like, I was hanging out with Ron a lot, just with mutuals and stuff. And then I was like, yeah, I really want to release an album do this for real. And I feel like I need a label that I trust. And Ron was, you know, kind enough to hear me out on my ideas.
So you felt like you
I
were
had the music,
still
really.
Pitching yourself at that point.
I mean, I was, the EP is not really something I would necessarily show to somebody to get them to believe in what I, mm-hmm. what the outcome I'm wanting is, you know,
but
or
did
what,
you have
what
something
expecting.
In the chamber, like a demo
no,
that you could show and say,
I didn't, I just had a binder and photos.
So
and
what
words.
Was in the, what was on the mood board?
It was a lot of words. Like, you know, even just simple as intentional, intense, mm-hmm. loud, dance, glitter, you know, heart, different words like that. I think that were just really simple, but I was like, these are things that I actually want to feel from the music, you know? And it was colors. I had a color board, like aquamarine, actually the mm-hmm. color was on it before the song ever existed or even the idea for it. Pink, hot pink was
sure.
on it, of course.
Just like dance.
Yeah.
Just
like
dance class.
Yep. Purple, yellow. Mm-hmm. Really, it was pretty rainbow, which is what the album ended up, the cover ended up kind of, you know, having a reflection of, is like very much like a multicolor world universe. And so walked in with that and some photos of my favorite performances of all time, screenshots from them.
Let's go.
Yeah, what are they?
Like when Britney did Baby One More Time and rips the suit off and has the nude, Slave for You. Yeah. Obviously, one of the best performances of all time. Gaga's Paparazzi.
You're talking VMAs or music video?
Yeah, VMAs. Yeah, these were like live moments.
Sure.
Even like stuff from The Girly Show, Madonna, Janet, even Prince. I think like just moods that I would feel from images from those performances. I was kind of like, this is what I hope to carry. I hope I can make people feel the way I felt when I watched these performances, you know? I walked in and said, that's the dream that I have, is to make people feel what I feel when I listen to these songs, these artists, mm-hmm. you know, these producers, And when I look at these colors, this is how I feel. And Ron was like, okay, well.
Go time.
Yeah, let's see what you can do with that.
Luca and Elvira, mm-hmm. were you locked in with them at that point? Or was that the point in which you locked in with
them? No, I hadn't even met them yet when I had done that meeting. And I really didn't know what I wanted truly yet. I think I was pretty vague. You know, I was like, I know what I want people to feel when they hear my music, but what does that sound like? And what am I going to say? What is my sound? Who am I? What's the music going to feel like? What's the music going to sound like? You know, is it going to be just dance music? And I think I thought it was going to be one thing for a really long time. I was like, okay, it's going to lean towards the world of the EP. Maybe, obviously, hopefully better than those songs or, you know, have a little bit more of me in them. And then I met Luca and Elvira, and the day we met, we made Diet Pepsi.
Wow. Which was
really and then crazy. That opened up the door.
Well, I think when we made Diet Pepsi the first day we met, we were kind of like, well, we obviously have to do more sessions.
Because I do think it's a cool choice to make a relatively tight 12-song debut album with entirely one team of writers and producers, the three of you. Mm-hmm. So then walk us through the process from Diet Pepsi.
Right, like knowing when that
happened. Did you feel like at that point, the music industry, at least behind the scenes, starts to take you seriously? And, you know, did you send that to the label? And is that proof of concept? Or did you just keep motoring ahead?
I'm a little bit of a freak when it comes to sharing things with people before they're ready to me.
Yeah.
So the label didn't hear things for a long time.
Okay.
And they were pretty adamant on like, we need to hear stuff. And I was like, I'm sorry, you can't hear anything. Like, there's nothing ready to be heard.
Very relatable.
And so I was like, I mean, we made the hook the first day. And that happened. It's funny because we had a different idea. We went through a few different ideas before we got to that. And it was our first time really meeting. I met Elvira for the first time. Mm-hmm. She actually knew like Hype House stuff about me, which is really funny. Wow. She was like, I was watching that. Like, I hate to say it, but she's going to hate me for saying that. Funny. But it's so funny. And we made the hook at the end of the session. We were kind of like, all right, well, this is not going anywhere. You know, like, we're just going to go about our days, never see each other again, never work together again. Yeah. And then Luca started playing on the piano. We were listening to Sex, Money, Feelings, Die, actually. And that song, I was like, I want a song that makes me feel this, like, release, you know? And then Luca starts playing the piano, and we just start all kind of going into melody land, kind of humming things, you know, saying random stuff out loud. And yeah, and then we literally fell upon the Diet Pepsi hook. I think what we got first was the end of the hook, the losing my innocence. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the first part where we were like, damn, this might be something really special. And then we workshopped that a little bit, found, you know, what I wanted to say. And then we recorded the hook. And the next day, I played it for my managers. And I was like, guys, I don't know. We made this little thing that feels really special to us. I don't know if it's good or not. And I played it, and they were immediately like, this was really good.
It's go time.
Yeah, they were like, this is it. Like, this is... there's something special here. You should finish this. So we went in the next day, wrote the verses. Conan Gray came into the studio that day, like, just as I think he was working on his own stuff in a different studio. And he was just like, yeah, let me hear the idea you guys worked on yesterday. And we were all kind of like, oh my God, I don't know. And they're friends with Conan, pretty good friends, Conan. And Conan and I were like just starting to get to know each other at that time. But I was like, yeah, whatever, let's play him the song or just the hook. And he was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, you guys have to finish this. And so we did. We finished it that next day, and it took us 2 days to write that song. And then we were like, all right, let's keep making music. Let's keep doing sessions. And then the next time we worked was in Sweden.
Yeah, tell me about going to Sweden. So both Luca and Elvira are signed to Max Martin's publishing company. Yeah. Max Martin, obviously the guru of
the preeminent the pop songwriter of the last 25 years.
Yes. So then you go on that journey, the same journey that Britney took when she was 12 or whatever, you know, to over to Sweden to sit amongst the royalty of pop songwriting. What was Sweden like for you?
I mean, it was scary. I was like, I've never been here. I don't know what to expect. I definitely didn't feel much pressure at the time. I think I was kind of going into it pretty softly and feeling like, okay, well, whatever happens is going to happen. And I'm just with the girls that I wrote the first song with that I really loved. And let's see what happens. And then we ended up writing the song that comes after Diet Pepsi on the album. Mm-hmm. I'm like, are you checking to see what that is?
I am checking to see.
It was the second song we wrote, which is a little bit more of a satirical song. I mean, mm-hmm. if this is out, it's Money is Everything.
Yes.
Okay.
And that one's kind of crazy and silly, and we completely took a 360 from what Diet Pepsi was. And mm-hmm. I think that was kind of the goal, is to kind of teeter back and forth in these worlds that always feel like there's no pressure to match something.
Yeah.
Made Money's Everything, made Aquamarine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, okay, let's just keep going.
So then you had a palette for the album yeah. and you knew where the vibes were, what the sound yeah. was.
How long was that Sweden trip?
I think it must have been a week and a half, okay. maybe.
And one of the things that you've talked about, obviously, mood boards, colors, almost like everything but genre mm-hmm. or like a specific style. And so can you talk to me about landing? Because there are clear musical through lines on this record.
Totally.
Tremendous amount of up-tempo stuff. We were talking a lot about stacked vocals yeah. in the other room. Mm-hmm. A lot of tension between like a high ethereal vocal yeah. and something that's like lower and huskier.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of little interesting beat switches or like skittish, like
or holds.
Like little interruptions kind of.
Totally.
Tell me about developing that palette, because that's really the thing. More than any one particular genre or style, to me, it's like I'm identifying four or five techniques that are kind of recurring
I think
throughout.
That's my biggest goal, is to never feel like I'm referencing an exact song or artist or, mm-hmm. you know, instruments are okay. You can reference yeah. an instrument or feel like you can use, I mean, we used an M1 on a lot of the songs and, mm-hmm. and that was, you know, a very popular thing that was used on a lot of those great songs that I love.
Sure.
But I think like that's like the ground I'll meet it at. But I think when I think I've actually tried to go into the studio being like, I want to make a song like this, and never, ever, ever
never landing.
Like, I want to make a song that makes me feel like this song makes
yeah.
me feel.
And I one think of the it's things, even album-wise. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things I think is so successful about the sort of pastiche element of your music is that I always feel like I'm hearing something that I've heard before, but in a nice way, but I can't place it. You know what I mean? So it's like, it feels familiar without feeling redundant, and and I'm searching my mind for all of these references throughout, mm-hmm. you know, and that I think conjures a certain element of nostalgia for people when you feel like you're like switching through the radio dial of your youth or whatever,
yes,
but you can't place it one to one back to something else.
You.
Does that ring true to what you were aiming for?
Yeah, I think obviously I will always pay the dues to the people that came before me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very inspired by Prince. I'm very inspired mm-hmm. by Michael. I'm very inspired by Britney. I'm very inspired by Madonna. I mean, in life, I think that
sure.
it's not even about the music, really. It's just about the path of life that they've taken and gone on and how they've made their dreams come true.
And also the people you're naming are fully, I don't want to say invented characters, because it's not that they're false, but it's not simply, hey, here's three albums
totally.
And then that's it. It's the visual presentation. It's the live performances.
It's the commitment.
It's the, yeah. Yes, it's the commitment.
Yeah.
It's
and
the
I think
commitment.
That is what inspired me from them. And so I think the music, it all goes back to commitment into feeling and emotion. And even with the music videos, you know,
yeah.
I'm very sharp on making sure that I have a music video for all my songs, because I think visuals are such an important part of getting people to understand the worlds that
world,
I'm trying
right.
to bring them into.
At the same time, you're talking about these icons of popular music, but the other thing you're doing very effectively in the lead up to this album is tapping a little bit into the underground, you know, so you have the Boiler Room appearance. You have the Charlie remix, you have the Arca remix. You know, you have these people and you're sort of working not high-low, but mainstream underground together in concert. Like, were you conscious of trying to shore up your sort of bona fides among the cool kids to be able to sell on two levels? Because I do think...
I wasn't even trying to do that, really. I was just into these things.
Mm-hmm.
I think it... And that's what's funny to me, is that people are very quick to feel like it was to do that.
Right, but, like, are you hipster baiting or are you not hipster baiting?
Right, right. And I totally understand, like, mm-hmm. why you might would think that, but I think it's because I also wasn't sharing these parts of myself
right.
online, which mm-hmm. I, you know, like I was saying earlier, there was sacrifices to be made, and sometimes that was not committing to showing who I am that early on. I was just committing to making it.
Right, you're like, I'm not necessarily going to do numbers if I'm dancing to an Arca song.
Right, well, you know, yeah, I mean,
in
it
the
wasn't
early
like,
days.
Arkansas and Jar, I mean, trending.
Right, right.
No shots. But
they deserve to be.
Yeah. But
they, you know, should. One day. Yeah. One day people get it. I think all these things are things that people eventually understand and get. But yeah, I mean, I was hustling.
And commitment also. I mean, just even you were committed to the right TikTok audio. Right. It's basically you're as committed to the music now as you were to making, to becoming a standard on TikTok as well. And that's the through line more than any one particular sound or style or idea.
Exactly.
It's
committing
what you show up and bring every day.
And I think that, you know, I really made sure that I had the room and the abilities to play when I wanted to and when I could do it at the level that I wanted to play at. You know,
I think that's the other thing people noticed, or at least I can speak for myself, that I was responding to, as I was like, oh, now she's having fun with this. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't feel studied. It doesn't feel like, even though you're referencing certain things with rigor, you're not, it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like, oh, I have to make the music that my 90 million TikTok followers were like. It felt looser. You felt like you were having fun.
To be honest,
did you feel a weight off in that era as you were exploring these new spaces?
Yeah. I mean, I started to draw back a little bit on the sharing so much front, or feeling like I was needing to uphold this standard of whatever. I think I had that foundation that I was ready to explore that plane of. And so that opened up a lot of doors internally where I was like, okay, you know, I've done this. I have this luxury now to be able to play and explore and do what I want. And even if it's weird, I have the luxury to be weird or be introspective or be playful and curious and like a chameleon. I can do what I want here now, you know, and you don't really have that luxury when you start out. And I think people do it, and they do it really nicely and start out really niche and really cool and interesting, and it works for people. But I think for me, I was like, I don't know if that's going to work for me. Like, I know what I need to do, and that's how I'm going to get that luxury one day, you know?
And also, I mean, in the post-obsessed moment, going into the leaks moment, in a way, maybe it's a gift. That, imagine if Obsessed had totally worked.
Right.
And then you would just be on the path of doing like...
Yeah, what does your album energy sound like if Obsessed is a number one hit?
Who knows?
That's what I'm saying.
Thank God we don't know. I love where my life is.
No, it's really fortunate. And having the leaks come out and also having... In essence, you're doing public testing because all of a sudden there's 30 songs out there. And then people are kind of like, well, these seven are the ones. And then you're kind of like... Interesting. And they're maybe not the ones that if you were setting out to make hits, are the ones you would have made.
Well, I also think too with this album, I think with every single that's come out has been very intentional on my end of being like, you know, this is what should come next. And even with Aquamarine following Diet Pepsi, I think people were like, what?
There were pretty hard swerves.
Totally,
back and forth.
Totally. Which was the goal for me. Mm-hmm. It was never to give people what they wanted. And I think maybe that's why I felt so rebellious. And I do feel rebellious in a lot of ways. And I think maybe that's why I felt so inclined to dig deeper in myself when I started getting too comfortable feeling like I was giving people what they wanted, you know? I think when you give people exactly what they want, you end up really not liking it.
Yep.
I mean—
You're solving their problems, not
exactly,
yours.
Exactly. And it doesn't really give you that satisfaction of feeling like you're being an artist, you know? An artist does what they feel is necessary to survive. And I think when you give people what they want too much, you know, you can listen to what they want a little bit. Obviously, it's always nice to have a wider audience that can connect with these things and understand them. But I think for the most part, it needs to be pretty much from the soul or else really nobody feels anything. And maybe it works the few times, but then it kind of gets redundant and boring.
But also when you're trying to give people what they want, in essence, you're solving yesterday's problem.
Yes.
Because they've already had time to develop that taste profile. So if you're hitting them here,
totally,
that means you're not thinking about
totally.
The
and
next
I think
thing.
That's what we're kind of in a loop of these days, to be honest. Because I think once Diet Pepsi came out, I even felt that with the girls. We were kind of like, oh, well, time to move on from that now.
On to the next.
Yeah, on to the next. We're not going to make another Diet Pepsi and we don't want to, you know? Other people may try to make a Diet Pepsi and, you know, all the power
God
to
bless.
Them and hope it works. But I think when things are done, they're done. And I feel that way about marketing these days too, but that's a whole nother conversation. I'm like, it's been done. Move on. It is not happening again. I think that's a big lesson to be learned.
You put your headphones on. You're listening to your favorite song. What's playing?
Right and then, now?
No, in the lyric headphones on.
My favorite song is my music. I feel like Tarantino when I say that because, you know, he always says that when people ask him what his favorite movies are, he's like, my movies, because they're exactly what I want them to be.
Lil Wayne always famously said, I only listen to myself.
I love my music.
And then you need to smoke a cigarette to make yourself feel better. Mm-hmm. What's the cigarette?
Sometimes. Marlboro Gold.
Okay. Yeah. So you're listening to Addison Rae and you're smoking a Marlboro Gold.
Yeah.
Last question before we get to lightning round and then snack. I want to ask the inverse of what I was asking before.
Can we just do 2 hours?
Yeah. We got nowhere to be.
Ask everybody else's permission.
In the other room. Feel free to
they are like, locked
please
out.
Stop talking.
They are
locked out. They're like, please stop talking.
So when we were talking about when you were making TikToks, I asked, like, what did you learn about pop music while you're making TikToks? Now I wonder, you have these songs. I don't imagine you're thinking about TikTok while you're making the songs. But clearly, the app is still huge. It's still a huge platform. After you're done with the song, when you're done with Diet Pepsi, when you're done with headphones on, do you then think about it and say, I know which part of this is going to be the one that people are going to go crazy for?
I mean, I think about it, obviously, as everybody kind of does.
Well, not everybody has 90 million followers on TikTok. So it's like, you know, you're an expert.
Yes.
Well, I don't even think so. I'm not an expert. I'm still figuring it out. I think nobody's an expert, which is why most of this stuff is not working.
You can't reverse engineer it.
No, and you can pay all the people you want to post to a song, and good luck,
all those
babe.
PayPals.
Good luck, babe. All those PayPals. And that song might just be yourself at the top 30 videos, you know? It's rough. It's rough. And it's hard. And people want that because they think that it works. But I don't know. I have a lot of opinions on that. I don't really like to think about it.
But so you try not to think. But you know, it might even be an edit that somebody else makes. Like, it might not even be, like, the part that you think.
Well, I'm
like,
hopeful that people connect with it enough to post a video to it. But I really don't think about it. I don't like to think about it.
You have to put that out of your mind to create the music you want to make.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll be surprised. Maybe one day you'll open the app and someone will
put it. I really wanted high fashion to be a thing on TikTok, but, like, whatever. It's fine. One day it'll get its flowers.
We have the PopCast deck of cards.
Okay.
It's time for the lightning round, the PopCast questionnaire. 52 cards correspond to 52 questions, pre-written. We're not doing any funny business here.
Scary.
The questions are the questions.
Okay.
The questions. So you're going to pull five cards.
And they range from,
one at a time, I would say,
very light to there are some maybe potentially emotional questions.
Some are silly, some are deep, and it's not the same for every person.
I'm excited now.
All right. So pull a card and we'll get going. All right, what do you got?
Nine of clubs.
Okay, this is potentially on the deeper side. And I would say in advance, feel free to not answer this question.
Really? Okay.
Follow your heart.
Does any part of your body cause you stress?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I think the whole thing.
The whole thing, actually.
Strong
it's
answer.
It's a thing that I think... it comes and goes, you know?
You think hard about it. I mean, one thing in the profiles I've read of you, you talk a lot about being very committed to working out and thinking a lot about fitness and health. It's on your mind.
Yeah, I love to work out.
You respect the vessel.
I do. Yeah. And I also like appreciate it. And I think in order to make that known to your body, you have to give it what it needs to understand that. I think I always, after I run, and I love running. I really love running. I love weightlifting. I love shaping. I love the challenge of shaping your body into what you want it to be. And I think it's a really possible thing that people sometimes will act like you can't really do, but you can. And I think, you know, you see Olympians and people that are really committed to those things that make it happen. And it's inspiring to me, and the push is inspiring. So yeah, my body definitely stresses me out because I feel like it always comes out in your day. Even the way you treat your body, what you eat, what you put in it, you know, how I've also been in this weird phase of like being hyper aware of hurting myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, wait, you can't just like let yourself get hurt. Like, this is it. Like, I mean, scars. I have a really big scar on my knee that
welcome
I'm like,
to your mid-20s. It only gets worse.
Like, shit. Also, like, even the blisters on my feet, I'm like, wait, do I have an infection? Like, I'm starting to get to this point where I'm like, you have to really treat your body with grace because that's all you got.
And there,
you
know?
So my body stresses me out because I'm like, I can't get hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, even this blister that I got, I was like, my whole foot was like turning numb. And I'm like, am I going to be able to dance tomorrow? Am I going to be, you know, these are things that you have to think about. So yeah, my body stresses me out. But I like the way my body looks. I feel good in my body.
Pull another card.
Ace of spades.
Wow. Ace of spades. Good pull.
Ace of spades. Oh, you're pulling the deep questions.
Really? That's so me.
What did your parents not teach you that you wish they had in retrospect?
Oh, I feel mean.
It doesn't have to be mean. You know,
no, this it's is ultimately not mean.
About
it's not
you.
Mean and
it's
I,
about
and
you
I love,
ultimately. Yeah, it's right. not about.
Maybe like communication to solve problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think my family is a little avoidant. And I think it's for the sake of peace a lot of times, which mm-hmm. I recognized is not the solution. And I'm a Libra, so I'm very much the peacemaker. And I like to
Same.
Avoid conflict. I'm like, no need to address how I feel. We can just like let it go by seamlessly right. and smoothly and maintain balance.
If I just keep a face, if
yes.
I just like hold like, it I'll, together, yes, then I'll deal everybody with this later. Will be fine.
Yes.
Like, you know. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe I wish they would have told me that communication and directness is connection.
And you know, certainly during your TikTok rise, like you had a tumultuous meta narrative around your family.
Totally.
And I imagine that must have been
Which
also
is,
quite draining
also,
as
yeah.
all the positive stuff's happening. You're like, oh, there's this added layer of weight that it's not even my burden, but like here it is.
Well, and it's really devastating for anyone to deal with. And yeah. I have a lot of grace for my parents. And, you know, they're just figuring it out too. And all this was really new to all of us. And it was a rough time, but, you know, we've constantly and will always continue to look on the other side of that and hopefully always be able to feel better about our relationship.
Sure.
All right, a couple more. Try to pull a fun one, huh?
Yeah, geez.
Yeah. No, this is the most emotional set so far. Jack of Hearts. All right, let's see. Okay, lighter question. Do you gamble?
We were talking about this.
And if so, what's your game?
We were talking about this
yeah,
right before
this
we started
like,
recording.
This feels like I don't trust
you. We did not set this up.
All right. I believe you. Okay. I like Texas Hold'em. Like
oh,
poker.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blackjack's all right, but I prefer poker.
But you're a poker girl.
I love poker.
Yeah.
And you're playing like with friends or on an app?
With friends.
Okay.
And real money?
Real life, real money? Yeah, but I don't,
like
I don't
real
condone
money or like
gambling.
A dollar,
I am not.
Like,
my, no, like. It depends.
You might have
like Addison Rae money or New York Times reporter money.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not foolish.
Okay.
I'm not foolish, but right. I like to have fun.
And poker is the game.
And poker is fun. I actually learned when I was filming a movie last year. I was filming this movie and I got to learn from Aubrey Plaza and Dan.
Oh,
Levy.
I read that you mentioned that somewhere.
They taught me poker was a journey for
I feel
us.
Like Aubrey
really
would
fun.
Be good because she could throw you off with her bluffs.
Totally, yeah, totally.
Crazy bluff.
I mean, they're both really amazing. And I was like, oh, great, I got to up my game. So I was like, I was pretty in there for a little
and
bit.
She's very competitive. I know she plays softball.
Very, very competitive. Very competitive. But we like to play against the dealer because we want to give ourselves, you know.
Okay.
We don't want to go against each other.
No, of course not.
But yeah, I do like to play poker.
Do you really go you Vegas? Have you run the tables?
No, I need to go back. But I'm a little scared because we were in Bulgaria doing that, and that even was that was
gambling
really
in Bulgaria.
In Bulgaria.
I
and that was like downstairs, like pretty intense, and
like secret game.
And they were mean, like the men there
the high
were
rollers.
Mean. Yeah, they were like oh, that was
girl.
Bad. I'm like, oh my god, I'm just learning. Jeez,
like I'm in a Bulgarian basement.
Yeah, like give me a break.
Yeah,
I'm
like,
already going through a lot.
Jesus.
Yeah, but wow. No, I do love poker, and I do need to go to Vegas and play. But I like. Roulette.
Or
I played
like
in Vegas.
Low key, Atlanta. I mean, look, Atlantic City is trashy, but it's almost better because
right.
it's trashy.
And
I
we'll
mean,
hit
like,
your Jersey restaurant on the way back.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Edgewater, yeah.
I'd be down for thing. That, actually.
Big run.
Yeah. All right, two
Podcast
more cards.
On the road? Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Seven of diamonds.
Seven of diamonds.
You do not have a good hand.
Okay, this is also a light. This is also a light one. Bon Iver was on a couple weeks ago, and he drew a full house.
All right. I know, I heard that.
All right, number seven of diamonds. What's your go-to YouTube video to show someone, to show a friend?
Oh, my gosh.
Is there, like, a secret?
Yeah, like late night? Or pre-
yes,
so
okay.
you're at the pregame. You're yeah. showing each other videos. What do you pull up to get a good reaction in the room?
There's this video. It's a tire commercial. I have no idea. I'm blanking on where it is even from. It is some international tire commercial.
All right, we're going to find it.
It's this rhythmic gymnast dancing.
Wow.
And she's, like, spinning. It's beautiful. She's amazing. The technique is great. And then she hits this, like, final pose, and, like, a tire falls on her head. And she, like, falls over. And I can always find it. I still know what it is. But I found it when I was really little, and
oh
I love God. It.
All right, last card, and then we'll try a snack.
What do we got? Eight of clubs. All right, we're back to serious.
All
right. We're closing out. It's okay. Last question.
Yeah.
What sparks your jealousy?
Ooh. I'm pretty jealous.
Let's go. Let's go.
I'm pretty jealous.
Romantically, socially, professionally, or all of the above?
Yeah, it's all the same thing, I think, for me. I'm pretty, but no, I'm not jealous. I actually prioritize communication within these moments a lot. Like, I think jealousy is a really pure emotion. You know, it comes from like a really pure space of maybe feeling unwanted or ignored or self-conscious or insecure. You know, I do know that jealousy stems from those things. So I think when I feel jealous, I'm like, I gotta speak about something. Like, something's coming up in me that I need to address within myself. And maybe that is just the outlet for it, you know?
Do you take it to the other person, or do you just sort of like, do you have a, is no, it a friend?
I'll take it.
Is it a therapist?
I'll take it to the other person.
You'll go straight to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a great therapist, though. I do.
Everyone should.
The best therapist. I love my therapist. Yeah, I'll speak up about it. Mm-hmm. I think jealousy can be figured out and understood in ways that are helpful. A lot of times.
Do you find when you bring it up to people who are the objects of the jealousy or who are triggering it, do they understand where you're coming from? Or do you feel like you've got to, like, in a way, you know more than they do? And
well,
it's almost
hard to. You
definitely
got to address it with you first, because I think it can get really intense and like a little bit too off the dome, where it feels like, oh, this is coming from, it starts to come from a negative place sometimes. So I think it's like figuring out why you feel that way, addressing that. I mean, I get jealous over little things. Like, I get jealous when I don't feel as important to someone as they feel to me.
Yeah.
I think that's something that comes up sometimes when, and I think it's a more personal thing. Maybe that's a better way to look at it. Like, personal things make me a little more jealous because I'm feeling like a lack of, you know? And, but at the same time, I don't get that jealous. I think I like to really see the beauty in both sides of things and understand people are also their individual people and that they're.
And everyone is frail.
Everyone's
in their own
frail.
Way.
Yeah,
everyone is frail.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
So let's give your therapist a raise. I feel like they're doing like a pretty good job.
Like a genuinely beautiful
answer. Yeah, I'm like, I need to see her like soon.
Send her this clip.
I just miss her.
Send her this clip. She's doing
She's
the work.
She's really supportive.
She's doing the work.
Me. I'll send it to her.
All right. Every episode of Popcast, we always close out with a snack.
Yay.
You took a look at the pantry. Very full pantry today.
John thinks I stacked the deck.
You did stack the deck.
This is what happened.
Candidly,
I was in the suburbs over the weekend, and I happened upon a candy that called out to me. I'm a big fan of Airheads.
Same.
Big in my little league. This was like a childhood snack for me. I still eat Airheads to this day. I feel like nobody else buys Airheads. People buy the bites, but I feel like
Airhead
people
extremes.
Don't buy the. Oh, you like the sour ones.
I saw this in your interview magazine, Mel Ottenberg conversation. So I sort of knew, I had a feeling this would go this way, but Joe knew.
So these are Airhead Sours bars, which are brand new, I've never seen before. I bought two bags. I bought one for home and one for work. And I told John, I think I've got a snack that Addison is going to pick.
Wait,
and to be fair, the pantry
that.
Is full right now. So
no, there
were a lot of choices. You had a couple things you were interested in, but we settled on sour Airheads. I also think this is good because John has a sensitive palate when it comes to spice and sourness.
This is going
to
be a struggle for me.
And he doesn't eat sour candy.
Yeah, this is going to be bad.
You want to pick your flavor? You want to pick your flavor?
Yeah,
you want to do a random?
No.
Okay, so
there are multiple flavors.
So there's three flavors. There's sour blue blast berry. You want that?
Wait, or is there a cherry?
There's watermelon punch, and there is lemon berry squeeze.
No, this is for me.
You're a blue. Mm-hmm. You're going blue.
At least do me the favor of giving me the watermelon one.
You want the watermelon?
I don't want any of them, but I
have to watermelon. So John gets a watermelon. So I guess I'll do the lemon berry to cover the whole.
Oh, man, I'm not going to like this.
I'm going to love it.
Oh, you can have the whole bag. Don't
worry.
Look at
this.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Look at this consistency.
Have you ever had an Airhead before, John?
No.
Even a regular?
No.
All right.
I'm feeling the sour a little. But Airheads naturally have that sour smell.
They have like a little, normal Airheads, I feel like, have a little tang.
Yes. It's not like sour.
But they're not like coated in sourdust. Like it's not a.
Cheers.
It's
cheers
not a
you.
Sour Skittle.
Cheers to y'all.
Cheers. Thank you
so
for
fun.
Being here.
It does smell good.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the scientist did.
I mean, I love it.
It's a perfect candy.
Yeah, it goes. I can't argue with it.
I love it.
And not that sour.
It's not that sour.
It's
maybe
more,
your flavor I wouldn't like.
No,
but
yeah.
I feel like either this one or the one that Addison has I would like.
It has the flavor of sour.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's not sour. It has
citric acid.
But like you definitely would taste it and be like, I could see why you would say this is sour.
I mean, Allow me to rhapsodize about the Airhead for a moment. Just like, an Airhead is a journey. Like, even when an Airhead is stale, it's still good mm-hmm. because eventually you pass the staleness. Yes. And when it starts to melt and like dissolve in your mouth, and then like you get the little kick in the back of your tongue, you know, mm-hmm. your saliva ducts start reacting. It's just a magical.
I love your reviews.
It's a magical candy. I mean, I think an Airhead is probably my number one candy. Mm. So I'm just like, I'm so happy to share one with you. And a brand new flavor.
Is this the texture of a normal Airhead?
Yes.
This is what it normally is.
It's very consistent.
It reminds me of like baseball games.
That's what I said, Little League. Yeah. That's where I like.
And like, I want a pickle now.
Yes.
That's a savage follow.
And a beer.
Savage
pickle,
follow.
Beer, Airhead. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
I'm going to be honest, as someone unfamiliar with the Airhead Ouvre, I might have to come on the team.
All right.
I think I'm in.
So we're ranking out of 10.
I don't believe you because I ate the whole thing.
I almost choked on it, so that's I'm working on the logistics.
We have to finish the show and then we'll finish the Airhead. All right, so out of 10, Airhead Sour, mm-hmm. where are you going?
Like it in itself?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
I'll give it a 10 because I think that matches with the regular Airhead, which is really good.
Yeah, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, it's great.
No complaints.
I'm going to go like 8.5 because I feel like I'm about to choke on whatever thing that I just swallowed. But if it's the texture palette and flavor intensity of a normal Airhead, I think you just wrecked me.
You might have to go buy a bag of the regular.
I'm going
to go
rack out. The cherry one's really good, too.
Yeah, cherry. And, you know, they have White Mystery, too, which is allegedly all the Airheads mixed together.
White Mystery?
Yeah, it's whatever's left over at the factory.
I don't choose the White Mystery.
You don't bang with White Mystery?
No.
Okay.
I've spent my whole life trying to figure out what it tastes like.
Yeah, it's weird.
All right, well, I'll on a later episode, we'll come back.
7-Up or something.
Yes, it's like Sprite flavored.
It's like a lemon-lime situation.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm doomed now. Well, that is our show. First of all, thank you to Addison Rae. Tongue out. Wait, do you too? Use your tongue?
No, you didn't.
Yours is a little blue.
Yeah, yours is
green.
Whoa.
Blue, green.
Yours is blue.
Wow. That's... Okay. We'll all remember this forever. Addison Rae, what a gift. Thank you for being here.
You.
Happy to have you.
Thank you.
Episode of Popcast is at nytimes.com/popcast. Get us on Instagram at Popcast. Get us on TikTok at Popcast. And get us on YouTube at Popcast. Subscribe anywhere you get your audio content, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, etc. Credits in the credits. We will
credits
be back.
Credits in bio.
Credits in link in bio. Credits in bio.
Smash that like button.
That's exactly right. Addison says follow Popcast, so I know that's what
Smash
everybody's
that
gonna
follow.
Do. We will see y'all next week.
Thank you. Okay. Next up is Diet Pepsi.